I won't be saying Shia tonight. I'll just make some mention, some recollections, some reminiscences of different things that stand out in my mind from Rav Soloveitchik. My first recollections of Rav Soloveitchik were not really from the Shir, but rather from the regular Shir that he gave in the yeshiva, but rather from other lectures. I remember when I was, must have been about 10 years old, I'll have to check the dates, my family lived in Philadelphia and I was going to Yeshiva Ketan in New York. At that time there was no yeshiva in Philadelphia. And I was too young to, I was staying by my grandparents, who were older people, and I was very homesick for my parents. So my father had to take me by train to come home every so often, every month or so. So I remember once my father wanted to take me home to Pesach or something, and the Rav was speaking. Must have been to the Mizrahi, I don't know. The Rav was speaking that night, so he took me. So it was going to be too late, he was going to go hear the Rav, and he was going to go pick me up, so he took me along. And I had to listen to the Rav's Lange Megillah, Lange Drosh. I must have been about 10 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, I don't know. And then he took me home by train. So that was the first drasha that I heard from the Rav when he was speaking about the German reparations money. And he was opposed to it. At that time, the German government was offering reparations money to Eretz Israel. And the shaila was whether they should accept it or not. So the tilfel that the Israeli government had at that time was an ethical tilfel. Is it proper to take the money? Because in this way, they'll, in a certain sense, be giving a kaporet to the Nazis, to the Germans, that they feel as if their conscience was cleared. So Rav Soloveitchik at that time said, forget about the conscience clearing, they have a din of Amalek, and he gave this piece in the name of Rav Chaim, that the din of Amalek is not necessarily those who are biological descendants of this nation, but rather any nation that makes up its mind to wipe out the entire Jewish people. And the halacha says that not only are you not permitted to leave anybody from Amalek alive, you have to kill the men, the women, and the children over their property as well. This was the first recollection I had of the Rav. I remember over the years, at that time I didn't know whether yes, no, I had text, okay, a little boy. So I was thinking over the years. I thought to myself that this was probably not right. Even if they had a deal about Amalek, I can't get back my own money. They stole millions. They stole billions, trillions from the Jews. I can't get back a little bit. So I thought to myself, you know, Mustamad's wrong. But maybe now you see Mustamad's right, because now they have in the newspapers that the Israeli government says that all of the highways, that all the reparations money we use for paving the highways in Eretz Israel. And they have in the papers now, I think last year, that all the highways have to be redone because they did it wrong the first time. So all the reparations money went down the drain. I remember after that, my father would take me, before the Bar Mitzvah, I don't know, 12, maybe 11, I have to check the dates. The first Yortzeit Rosh I remember stands out in my mind where the Rav is speaking. He used to give the Yortzeit Shir in here because he insisted, and it used to be so crowded. People would come, the boys would sit here from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to make sure that they get a front seat. They used to sit with their Gemaras and the 4-volume Gemara and the 2-volume Rambam. They used to stand over here and sit. I guess it's, I don't remember. They used to say yeshiva over here and the place was crowded, and it was so crowded people would stand in the halls and people would stand outside in the street. And they used to plead with the Rav every year that he should switch the length of the time. He said, no, no, he has to say the shir here. This is where his father used to say the shir. And the people said they didn't think that that was accurate. His father used to say the shir in the side room. So he said, his father said the shir here, so he wanted to say the shir in the space manager. That still was just unbearable. But then he had to move to the big auditorium. So I remember the first Yortzeit Shir that I heard was about Kiddush and Abdullah, about Kiddush B'mach Yisudah, and about if you forget the Alef Yovan bench, if you forget the say. About how Skaras mean Amora, it made a big Russian. It stands out in my mind today from Pasha from Zikaron. I used to hear the outside Russians. They were very wicked Russians. Hespedim also, the Rav was noted for his Hespedim. I think most of the people probably didn't get what Dr. Lamb and Chaim Soloveitchik said yesterday. Dr. Lamb started off by saying he thinks the only one who could say a proper Hespedim for the Rav would be the Rav himself. Sounded a little funny. What does that mean? Chaim Soloveitchik said the same thing. What they meant was that those who remember the old times remember the Rav said knockout has faded. Moiridik. I remember the story used to go, there was a legend, I don't know if it's true or not, they said that they once asked the Rav to say a hesped when someone passed away. He said, sorry, you have to let me know 2 weeks in advance. That's what he used to say. I don't know, maybe it happened, I don't know. But he said quite a few has faded that stood out in everyone's mind. Chaim Soloveitchik was alluding to some of them yesterday. He would say at the beginning of the Hesped that Al Tidin, he called quoted a Medrash, I'm not that familiar with Midrash, I don't know where it is. He quoted a Medrash that says that the Bezel Shalmailo paskins on Niftar. Based on the testimony, based on the Gvira status that the Maspidim give. And that's why the Poskim quotes from the Ovel Rabbasi, the Kishem Sheniftarim and HaMesim, Kach Niftarim and HaMaspidim, that if the Maspid exaggerates too much, a little bit of exaggeration is understood, then you take off a little bit. But if one exaggerates too much, so that's considered a violation of Eda Sheker. So he would mention this every so often, the beginning of a Hesper, that a Hesper has to be honest, and you have to size up what the person was and what he stood for. He would analyze, he would give a Nakan Hesped and analyze some major aspect of the person's life or works or personality that was relevant to him. There would be a Musa Shmutz. He would explain what this person stood for in a certain area. And then related to us, one of the major Hespedim that stands out in my mind, this was of course after Rabbi's mind, after Rabbi's already in the shul, was the Hesped that he said for Rabbi Avola Soloveitchik, his uncle that was referred to yesterday. The Chaim Soloveitchik yesterday alluded very briefly, he was giving Ramazan, I think most of the people didn't get it, he alluded, he said my father spoke in his Hesped about Erisin and Nisun, but he didn't explain what it is. The Rav said in the Hesped for Avavla, along with many other beautiful thoughts, he said that the Pasuk tells us, Torah Tzivu Lo Moshe Marosha Kihilas Yaakov. The common comment, Patikri Marosha El Amur Rosa, the Torah is like a Naira HaMarosa to all of Bnei Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik said, but there are two levels in marriage, there's the Erisin and there's Nisun. Nisun is when the woman moves in and she lives with her husband. So Rav Soloveitchik said, the Torah is like an Arusa to the Hamaynam, everybody has a chelek with the Torah. But in order to be a level of Nisun, that's only by great, outstanding, unusual Talmid HaChachamim. What is accomplished by Nisun? So he said, Al Tidin, Aloch, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin. In the third parak, in the Sugya of Kroivim, Sudum Leidus, the Gemara has the principle that Ishtar can do from Balki Ishtar. And not only am I posel eidus to my wife, I'm posel eidus to my wife's brother, to all of my wife's relatives, and so on. So that principle only begins to apply yesterday nisun. During Erisin, the Gemara says that principle does not apply, because Ishta Kedufa is only yesterday nisun. So Rav Soloveitchik explained how it relates to Torah, that when a person is married, let's say, for several years, so the couple gets to know each other so well, the husband already knows his wife so well, the wife knows the husband, that they don't even have to communicate. When they're thinking about something, they don't even have to talk to each other, they don't have to wink to each other. Each one already knows what the other one would be thinking, what the other one's position would be about this certain matter. So he said that that's what it means, that everybody has erisim with the Torah, but unusual tamid hachachamim, outstanding gedolim, like his uncle at that time, he was speaking about Rav Velvele, have nisuin with the Torah, and they have an intuition, that when you ask them a shaila, they can tell you based on their intuition what the halacha is. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was alluding to yesterday when he mentioned that there are some people have heirs and some have nisuin, and his father, Zechon Lebracha, had nisuin like he said about his uncle. It's interesting, there's a Rashi on Parashas Tetzaveh, where Rashi is commenting on the Big Day Kohunet. And it's a little unclear exactly what the Big Day Kohunet looked like. So Rashi writes in one place, Believe me, and I have the sense, I have the feeling, that it means like this, and he starts describing what it is. So one of the Talmid HaChachamim from New York City, the way he read it, Rav Gershon Zaks, once commented al derech halotza a little bit. He said, how can Rashi make such a comment, believe the Yomali? What do you mean my heart tells me? Doesn't it say in the Kriya Shema v'los Surah HaKrei Levavte? Are you permitted to follow your heart? The simple meaning is, it's not a kash. The simple meaning is you're not permitted to follow your heart to do some lustful act. So just follow your heart as far as interpreting Pshat and the Tosik, so that's not the violation of Lois Asur. Well, there are halotza, he asked this kasha, so he said, the answer is, Rav Gershon said, the answer is, when a person fulfills the Tosik in Mishle, Kosvim Aluach Libecho, when he engraves, he has learned so much Torah that he has engraved it on his heart, so then if he follows his heart, then it's okay, then Libi Adali is okay, then there's no violation of Lois Asur, Rav Gershon. This is what Rav Soloveitchik was depicting, as in his mind was Nisun, that great, unusual Talmid HaChachamim can feel an intuition as to what the halacha should be. They don't have to look through the sugya. But remember, a few years ago, the Rav was already not well. So one of the rabbonim who always used to consult the Rav in Shilas called me up on the telephone, and he asked me, what do I think about a certain thing? So I said, I have to look it up. So he said, but what's your gut reaction? So I said, I have no gut reaction, I have to look it up. So he said, but what do you say off here? He kept on asking. I said, I don't say anything, I don't know, I have to look it up. But come on, the Rav always used to say his gut reaction. Not the Rav said that. So I told him all of his what. The Rav had an intuition, and the Rav Taka said like that. The Rav once mentioned in Shia that great Goyim, when they would be consulted and he would be asked the shayla, they wouldn't first look through the sugyas and then be mevar the halacha and then come to the conclusion what the din is. They would have an intuitive feeling as to what the din is. Then they would look through the sugyas to see whether the information was correct or not, just to support the intuition. Not that they would go through mechadash without any negiyas at all. They had made up their minds in advance. There's a famous story about the Sam Sefer like that. The Sam Sefer used to write his tshuvas very quickly between Mincha and Maariv. He was in a rush. And he would leave the tshuvas on the desk and he would have his son, the Ksav Sefer, who was single at that time, have his son look over the tshuvas and then he would send it out in the mail. He knew who was too. He would send it in the mail. And whenever the Ksav Sefer wasn't so convinced that this tshuva should be sent out in the mail, so he would leave it there. He wouldn't tell his father, I don't like your tshuva. He'd just leave it there, he wouldn't mail it out. So there was one tshuva that the Ksav Sefer wrote, and sitting there for 2 weeks. The Ksav Sefer understood in 2 weeks, the son of Ray could have gone through the tshuva. So he asked him, why don't you mail out the tshuva? So he says, the one who asked the shayla is the one who got him yai. So you write him, and he understood it's got him lakan lakan. So you write him a tshuva, and give him a psashvacha raya from the Gemara. He can think of the raya. Not such a good ride. So the Ksav Sefer responded, this is where they write all the story. Ksav Sefer responded that as far as I'm concerned, my instinctive, intuitive reaction, the Muspel Rishon is the main thing. His Muspel Rishon was one way. Get the Raya, Mehechetaisa, yeah Raya, no Raya, the Iker is my Muspel Rishon. It doesn't matter whether the Raya is good or not. The one with the Osteris, leave the early, that was the main thing. In fact, years ago the Yeshiva had a practice that there used to be a Goro. The old timers will remember. But those students who were zeicha to get smicha would have to be in a lottery to determine who's going to be mechubed with serving in the army as a chaplain. Yeshiva insisted that we should have Orthodox chaplain. We don't have it anymore now. So they used to draw a lot. And whoever got, I already forgot the high numbers, low numbers, whatever it was, had to go to become a chaplain in the army. So one year the students made a whole revolution. They refused to go. So Dr. Belkin said, we have a psak. We have a written shuva from the Soloveitchik. That they have a right to draft us in the army. So one of the students, the president of the SOY, was a taki for that time. He said he wants to see the tshuva, and if he doesn't see the tshuva, we're going to riot, we're not going to give it. So Dr. Belkin has no break. He had to give it, he gave the boy the tshuva, on the condition, number one, that he gives it back tomorrow morning. Number three, doesn't make any copies. So number one, the student made a copy right away that night, made many copies. I remember I was in the dormitory upstairs, and he showed me, I'm showing everybody the copy. Then he gave it back to Dr. Belkin, of course, the other condition was fulfilled. Give it back the next day to Dr. Belkin. Why not? So that's how the tshuva, it was a tshuva in English, typed by Rav Soloveitchik, dear Dr. Belkin, it started off, and Rav Soloveitchik's stationery, and he starts writing out the shayla. The shayla was not whether the yeshiva can draft the students to the chaplaincy, whether the student is permitted to volunteer, it was in Gansanon on the shayla, whether he allowed to volunteer to the chaplaincy. Hayoyis that you know that he may have to violate Machalos HaSurah, he may have to violate Shabbos, what's the issue of Machnas Atzel, Matzel Shal Tchias HaSurah? He goes to the Balamon, and he comes out why he thinks that it's moved. Okay. But in the beginning of the tshuva, he writes this klal. He writes this in the beginning of his tshuva in English. That by he has a tradition that by great Goyim and the great Talmid Chachamim, they pasken based on their intuition, and then they check with the source to see that they didn't substantiate that intuition. And he writes that his intuition in this situation is that one is permitted to volunteer for the chaplaincy. He's going to proceed to show that his intuition is correct. It's not that he goes through the sources and after figuring everything out, that he came to the conclusion, based on his Levi Omerly, he felt that that was it. This was true by the Rav. He always had quite an intuition. And most people don't have such ability to have such an intuition. I remember the outstanding Hesped that Rav Soloveitchik said, Rabbi Sheshatsky's people were speaking about it for weeks and weeks afterwards. The way he commented on the Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Avodah, the Gemara comments, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam do all day? What is the state of Hayyad? So the Gemara says during this hour he does 9 to 10 he does this and 10 to 11 he does that. But the Gemara says there's 1 hour in the day when the Ribbono Shel Olam plays with the Levyosi. What does that mean? He plays with the Levyosi. So he gave an interpretation and that Agadah says that it means that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't take the world so seriously. You don't have to take everything so seriously. So he's speaking about the Rav Moshe Shatzky's Zuchan of the Rav, that whenever he, the Rav, had some aggravation, someone had insulted him, or some politics or something, he would be aggravated, that he'd go up to speak to Rav Moshe Shatzky's, and he would complain, how am I, this one's awful, this one said this, and this one said this. Then Rav Moshe Shatzky would say, get. Shouldn't take it to heart, so he was stressing this get. You should take it. So for weeks people were, and he was the Rav, stressing how important this Madrega is, this Myla, which meant this Myla to say, eh. Yeah. So for weeks everybody was walking around and greeting each other, They were cosmic along with the whole Hesped in the one crack. For weeks people were cosmic along. I remember the Rav said an unusual Hesped, the Dean Zohar, who died in this place Medish in front of everybody. There was a Chag HaSmicha. And he had, I guess, a heart attack, whatever, and he was embarrassed to take his nitro, he was speaking, he was embarrassed to take his nitroglycerin pill. He was embarrassed to stop. So he finished his talk and he sat down on the beam over there, and then he slouched over with his hand in his pocket. He died trying to get the pill. He died in front of everybody. And the next day, there was a Levaya here in the yeshiva. So I remember, so Leitchik said at that time, started off, the shame shen is torn in amazing, kaffin is torn in amazing, you have to tell the truth. So he developed, every hesed he said was on that kind of hesed. He would develop a theme with a mocha from the Gemara, and a chazal, and a maimer, and an agadah, and a interpretation, and apply to this person. So he said at that time, there's a pasuk in the Hemi Terech Ches, where it says that they started the second Beis HaMikdash was built in the days of Ezra Nehemiah, and they opened up the Holy Temple for the high holiday. It says they opened up on Rosh Hashanah. And when they were lighting Kriyas HaTerah, Ezra said he got the first Aliyah, he was a Kohen. Got the first Aliyah, they said, Baruch HaSa Hashem on Berah, and everybody said, Baruch HaSa Hashem on Berah, everybody was paying attention to the Kriyas HaTerah, it says. And then they were laying Kriyas HaTerah, and they laying the Feresh with Sim Seichel. And the pasuk says that it was a bima shaleis, there was a wooden platform in the Azore where the Balkur was laying, and when Ezra got the Aliyah, he was standing on top of that platform. And there were about 12 people standing on the platform, and the pasuk in the Nehemi lists off all of the names. So the Ralbag, in his commentary, on the bottom of the page of the Mikros in the regular standard Tanakh, has a comment. Why do they need so many people? Somebody got boing, maybe? Somebody got boing to stand on top of the bima shaleis. So the Rabbag has a novel interpretation. They needed a minion on the platform because you can't be mitzvah to people on the floor and on the platform. So Rabbi Soloveitchik suggested a different shot. Because the Gemara in the Zohar on Daf Lamed Ches comments on the Hemshech HaPsukim there, that it says, Vayavino Bamikro, they were laning with Gishmak, and they were laning Meferesh with Sumsechel. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Vayavino Bamikro, they were laning with Trop. And they were laying based on the Kriyat Siv. They were careful to lay the Kriyat Siv. So Rav Soloveitchik said, Mistome, what happened was that Ezra was laying according to the tradition, according to the Kriyat, but the Siv was different. So he told all the 12 people on the Bima, take a look inside. You see the Siv? I'm not going to read what it says. I'm going to say, according to the tradition, what the Kriyat is. When you have a Kriyat Siv, you have to point out that this is the Siv, and we're not going to lay like that. So he was being marach about that a little bit. And then he said that when we try to assess people, so very often there's a Kriya and there's a Ksiv. There's what it appears to be, and then there's what it really is. The Kriya is what it appears to be. And the Ksiv is what it really is. When you look inside, what is it in the Tov Tocho, shall a person, shall a Adam, what is it really? So he spoke about the Deen Zara of Hashalom, that he appeared to be A, B, C, D, different things, and he showed the way it wasn't really so, that the Deen Zara wasn't all of those things. People thought that he was a Tufti, and there's different Midas. Rav Soloveitchik explained that he knew Rav Shmuel Leib Zohar very well, and he was explaining what the Ksiv was. This was certainly so regarding Rav Soloveitchik himself. There were many things that people must misunderstood about the Rav. I remember when I first started in the Shia, so the Rav used to travel in from Boston every Tuesday morning, and he would give a Shia for a group of about 30 students, college students, for about 2 hours, and then he would, that would be the end of that shiur, then he would give another shiur, back to back, give another shiur, 2 hours to another group of smicha students, 4 hours in a row, and then he would give the shiur a Maria at night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday morning, right, there would be two shiurim, one for the smicha students, one for the college students, one for the smicha students, then he would go back to Boston. This would go on every week. And the Rav mentioned once to Maria that in the earlier years when he used to travel in from Boston, he used to say Tfilos Aderek, and in the later years when he used to go by plane, he got so used to it already, so he wasn't nervous at all, so then he stopped saying the Tfilos Aderek. He thought that the Din Tfilos Aderek is only when one is a little nervous about it. So very often, the Rav wouldn't always come in on a Tuesday morning, sometimes he would come in on a Monday morning, sometimes he would come in on a Thursday morning, so very often he would miss Tfilos Aderek, he would miss Kriyas Aderek. And he would come to the yeshiva, he would want to make a minyan. So he would always ask after the second shiur, is there anybody here who missed Kriyas HaTerah? So there would always be more than enough people to raise their hand. So then he said, okay, we're going to daven mincha in the Beis Medrash. The shiur would be over there in that room on the side, and he would walk into the Beis Medrash. So he would say, Ashrei, and the high school students would be walking by, high school college students would be walking by in the hall. We would say, Ashrei, then the chazan would say, Chatzi Kaddish, and we'll take out a Sefer Torah like on a time of sleep, we'll take out a Sefer Torah. And laying what you're supposed to lay in the morning, Monday or Thursday morning, then he would put back to say the third, they would say Chatzi Kaddish, and then they would daven mincha. So the people would pass by in the hall, they would think, must be a brisker shita. Shevi Rachamish, you got to link Kriyas HaTerah to mincha. Never heard of it, they didn't know that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say, you know, they weren't so familiar with the Shulchan Aruch, everything must be a brisker shita. Of course it wasn't a brisker shita. There was a little brisker shita here, that the Rav said that Rav Chaim's opinion was that Kriyas HaTorah is a Chavis HaYochid, not merely a Chavis HaTzibur, and if a Yochid means Kriyas HaTorah, so he should try to scrounge together a minyan in order to hear Kriyas HaTorah even, and Rav Chaim held that one can lay even late in the afternoon. There are some Poskim hold, the minority of the Poskim hold that Kriyas HaTorah Shevet Chamisha has to be dafk in the morning, before Hatzor is during his manot Tfilah Shachris, in conjunction with Davening Shachris. And the Rav Poskim hold, Allah and not so, that one can even learn Kriyas HaTorah in the afternoon. This was in fact Rav Chaim's practice. When Rav Chaim would be traveling, this is recorded in other places. Now, a lot of times the Rav used to tell us stories, and I used to wonder, is this really true? This is just a little too much to be true. And then 30 years later, I saw it in print in someone else's sefer, named Rav Elbel, or someone else by the name Rav Chaim, not from the family. It's not that they're quoting Rav Soloveitchik. I didn't have a munas kahal. The Rav used to give sometimes halhoges and biurim and interpretations, and I was wondering, is this really the pshat? And years later, I found that's the way a lot of Gdolim said that. He wasn't the only Rav. That's the quote, Rav Chaim said that, Rav Elbel, other Mitzvah Gdolim. He wasn't the only one. So this also, this state defense, that this was Rav Chaim's practice. So a lot of people misunderstood all the time. They thought, it must be a briska shita that you learn Kriyas HaTorah to Mincha. I remember on the yard side once, the Rabbi said, Davin Farnomis, on the yard side he would daven Chazor HaShat out loud Mincha, and then he would say Sim Shalom. What did he say Sim Shalom? Oh, so a whole group of boys figured out Agamta Torah, Agamta Pshat. So what? Well, there's a tiny steeple, so everybody says Sim Shalom, because he say Birtat Kahan to Mincha. Then from that when a person, when the Rav was fasting, we all know the Rav was fasting on his yard side, so you see that the Rav holds, the Rav sheeta, the Rav holds, that the Chazan says, Sim Shalom, even with the tiny yachid. So I remember when a group of boys said this, I said, you guys are crazy. There is no such thing. He said, no, I said, it's wrong. Why, ask the Rav, no. Obviously, so someone finally asked the Rav. The Rav explained, he says, Sim Shalom to Myrav also, he dam is Musa Harim. He always says Sim Shalom. He's not going to go check, but he was davening in the side room, so he has to go make a cheshbon, how many people daven Nusach Hari, how many people daven Nusach Ashkenaz. So he davened his Nusach, he said Sim Shalom. There are many people that misunderstand, many practices that the Rav has totally misunderstood, and many things. I mean, these are in a certain sense silly. In Shulchan Aruch there's an issue when the Chazan finishes davening Shmoneh Esrei, and he says, you should say Yul HaRatzon in retreat, should he step back to say Yosef Shalom and Brahim Avona? So the Poskim say that if he's going to say Kaddish right away, then he can rely on stepping back close to Shalom Ram to have the Kaddish. But if he's going to say Tachnun, so then the Mogen Avraham quotes from the Poskim that the proper practice is that the Chazan should step back 3 steps. He says, Yosef Shalom Ram softly before he gets to say Kaddish. Before he gets to say Tachnun, he shouldn't rely on the stepping back after the Kaddish. So that's what the Rav used to do when he was the Daven Farnam, when he had Yortzeit, Shachris and Mincha. So a lot of the boys didn't know that this is discussed in Shulchan Aruch. But the Rav has a new thing, so they would do the same practice on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Shabbos and Yom Tov, you don't say Tachnun. So there's no machlekes over there. Everybody agrees that the Chazan should rely on the stepping back by Yosef Shalom and Brahma. There's no machlekes over there. So finally, we convinced some of these Chachamim to ask the Rav. So the Rav said, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It just, when you say Tachnun, then you shouldn't rely. The Chazan shouldn't rely on the stepping back. But these are really trivial. The Gemara in the first pair of Mechulim comments. Gemara says that Rebbe Hita Beit Shan, based on the testimony of Rebbe Shu ben Zorah, the brother-in-law of Rebbe Meir, that he said that Rebbe Meir, Ochel Ala Shal Yerek, without being Machash Trumas and Maisus, so it's a riot that the parts of Beit Shan were Chutzlot, and whenever this Kacha, the Kedusha Shnir. So the Gemara says, and how do you know that that's the Maisus? How do you know that that's the reason why? Because it is Chutzlot, maybe this, and maybe that, and maybe he was Machash Belev, and maybe he was nothing named besides Zed Alpha Besarach. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Chazim Angar Rabbi Komaser Alev, Rav Shuv Ben Zorah, this is an autumn goal, he's telling you over. He saw a story of Rav Meir and he understood, he knew how to interpret it. So you see from the Gemara that if you have a Gavra Rabbi telling over a Maiser Rab, then you assume that he interpreted properly. But some people see an autumn goal do something, it doesn't necessarily mean that they understood properly. It may be that there are 99 points of information that are missing, they're simply misunderstood. There were more serious things that the Rav was sorely misunderstood. There was a story, the Rav used to tell Moiridika stories all the time. He used to tell a lot of stories in connection, very often in connection with the halakhas. So stories always helped us remember the halakhas. The fascinating stories that we would remember, so the men would remember. The way it's described in the Shulchan Aruch that when it comes to Kaddish, only one person says the Kaddish. It was a recent innovation that everybody says Kaddish at the same time. So there are rules and regulations. So who has the right to stay to one cottage? So if one is Shloshim, one is Shiva, a father, and a brother, and an uncle, and if he's Kodesh, and he's not, is he a member, is he not a member, how long did he live in the community, all kinds of rules. So once they're in the Shabbos Aryeh's community, there was an Asik, who's going to stay Kaddish? So the Shabbos Aryeh says, they should bar Goyim, they should draw lots. So some of Baal Batim will learn the people, so he says, Rebbe, but the Magen Avraham has rules and regulations, what do you mean bar Goyim? Whereupon the Shabbos Aryeh responded, and how do you think the Magen Avraham came to his conclusion? He also drew lots, so we're going to figure it out the same way the Magen Avraham did. So Rav Soloveitchik would tell over this story in certain instances when people would ask him, what's the law in a certain case? So he would say, Baruch Gerber. And then they would wonder, Baruch Gerber, listen, what's the law? So he would tell over the story from the Shabbos Aryeh, and he thought that they understood what he was driving at, that there are certain matters that are simply non-halachic. Just a silly mashal and other, they come to a community and they have red lights and green lights and you don't know what's the meaning of them. Red light means go or red light means stop. So Baruch Gerul, and make up your mind whether red light means go or red light means stop. It's not a halachic issue. It's an arbitrary thing. You have to decide one way or the other. So whenever it's a non-halachic issue, so you're Baruch Gerul. So Rav Soloveitchik would say this very often and he would tell over the story. And many of the people that he told it to totally misunderstood what he said. They would get furious. What do you mean Baruch Gerul? I guess what's the halachic? That's exactly what he answered. There is no halacha. The halacha doesn't have something to... What kind of a shirt should you buy? Should you buy a striped shirt or a white on white or a white? So he would say, Baruch Gerul. It's not a halachic issue. He's not asking me a shayla and din. So Baruch Gerul. So people misunderstood the rub. I heard people saying, Rav Soloveitchik said that all the Magen Avraham's decisions on Shulchan Aruch were based on the fact that he just drew lots. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. So why did he break his head all the time to figure out pshat in the Magen Avraham? Why did he break his head to figure out all he spent Shiva Nikim to figure out pshat in Ashver, Shach, and Yeredei, and Ashver, and Magen Avraham? That's not what he said. He was talking to people who didn't even understand his Sichas Chulin. What he meant to say was that it's a non-halachic issue. So there is no halacha, there is no psaka, so do whatever you want. Several years ago, I was sitting in a Pidyon HaBen next to Professor Tversky, and he told me that, he asked me if he can get a student from the Kollel to teach Gemara in Maimonides school. They had difficulties getting a good rebbe. So I said, to tell you the truth, I spoke to a few people already. The people from Yeshiva had already asked me. I spoke to some of the boys in the Kollel. They don't want to go because it's co-ed. But he tells me, oh, he understands that. And he tells me that he really misunderstood. He thought that he was close to his father-in-law, to the Rav, all these years. He thought he understood it in the Rav's position. And he came to the realization that he didn't understand it. His father-in-law had told him just a year or two before, but now that I'm getting old, he thinks that it's time that they should separate the classes in Maimonides. But as long as he was healthy and able to look around in the school, he felt that his supervision was sufficient to watch over the fact that it's co-ed. But now that he's old, he thinks that they should separate the clothes. So Dr. Dvorsky told me, I should get a good baka, I should get a good fellow from the co-ed, and tell him that we plan to separate the clothes. And tell him so. That's what I told the fellow. They got a good book. I don't know. I think they still didn't separate the classes. It's a problem. But this is what Dr. Tversky told me. This is already a major issue. We're not talking about the Kriyas HaTorah and Mincha. We're not talking about Oysa Shalom and Raimah. This is a more important issue. I remember the first year I was in Rav Soloveitchik Shir. There was a story, I was pretty young, I was only 16 then, I was still in high school, and there was a story going around. So I heard the stories also, there was a story going around, and I never ascertained it until yesterday. Yesterday I was sitting on the bima. So I had heard over 35 years ago who the Bala Maisa was. So I spoke to him yesterday, and I asked, did he ever hear this story? So he said, tell me, yeah, he was the Bala Maisa, and he told me over the Maisa Shoy. He said that when he was in the Rav Shir, he's pretty close to the Rav, he's a very bright student, he's pretty close to the Rav, and he asked him, when you go out with girls, that you have to be medaktik, to see to it that the girl wants to cover her hair. So Rav Soloveitchik told him, are you going out already? Is it just theoretical, or is it halacha l'maaseh? He says, no, I didn't start going out yet. So the Rav said, well, it will be halacha l'maaseh, then you'll ask me. And he didn't know what the Rav was so snappy about. He said, okay. So he waited three quarters of the year, whatever, till the next year, started going out. Then he came back to the Rav and told the Rav. He started to go out. And I asked the Shailan last year, whether married, whether one should be makbid about insisting that the girl should cover her hair. So Rav Soloveitchik told him, absolutely, the halacha is halacha, and don't ask me a kasha from the fact that there are so many choshev rabbani whose wives don't cover their hair. Halacha to halacha, and what it says in the Orach HaShpipul, Balozach, on the Orach HaShulvan, it's Narishkeit, it's Vam Tevel. That's not what it says in the Orach HaShulvan. I remember that story, and that's what when I asked the Bala Mais yesterday, and he told me there were many things, that the Rebbe simply misunderstood. People misunderstood the Rav in a tremendous way. They had the impression as if the Rav was interested in changing everything. We're changing over the whole mode of religious observance. My impression was not so at all. The Rav, in one of the every 3 years there used to be a Chag HaSmicha, the Rav used to give a major address in the auditorium on the occasion of the Chag HaSmicha. And I remember on one occasion he was giving a drush and it was getting on, it was long, he used to speak to Barichas. So on one occasion I remember that he used to be a Yiddish all the time, he used to say, Rabbi, it's only once every 3 years you can sit and listen. You're not going to have to suffer for another 3 years, it's okay. And I remember on one occasion he used to give major addresses on the occasion of the Chag HaSmicha. I remember on one occasion he was speaking, he was giving an ashora to the young Mismachim that they shouldn't rush to change the halacha when science comes up with some new fact. He says, Allah, the Torah is going to be with us for a long time to come. And the scientists may change their mind in a year or two. So don't be so hasty to change the halacha. He was very wary of changing any halachas. I remember, in fact, when the Rebbe delivered the talk called Dodi Dofek, check exactly what year that was, I don't remember. I remember he was banging on the shtender. He would knock every 10 minutes when he had another knock. So he would give, for the presentation, he would give very dramatic presentation. All the opportunities that the Rebbe Shalom gave Knesset Yisrael to come back to Eretz Yisrael and so on. So the good part of the drasha was published, but not everything was published. It stands out pretty sharply in my mind that part of the drasha was that Rav Soloveitchik was discussing this, the observance of Yom HaTzmut, Yom of the Yom. So he said he understands that in Eretz Yisrael the practice is that they take haircuts and they shtel tufas, they shtel chasenis, and Yom HaTzmut. In fact, he didn't mention it at that occasion, but they say, they have in the books, that all the boys in America are Arab, for most of the Yeshiva, so they don't shave during Tzvi. When it comes to Yom HaTzmut, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook insisted that everybody has to shave, and whoever didn't shave, and he would see them, he would say, Akar Aspon of Ansabah, you can tell on your face that you don't believe in Yad Hashem, you don't believe in the Rabban Shalom, is Nisim and Tzvois, and terrible, you have to shave on Yom HaTzmut, and it had to go. So I remember Rav Soloveitchik had this side comment that wasn't, I don't think it was part of the major, it wasn't the major point in the address. He developed the theme at that time that we have beautiful, wonderful minhagim, and we shouldn't think like them. So I was very young at that time, but I seem to recall that he said something that ran roughly as follows, that before every Yom Tov, when we have a simcha, we try to make a cheshben ha-nefesh and have a serious observance in advance to make sure that the simcha should be observed properly. So he said, before Purim, so you have Tainus Esther, before Pesach, you have Tainus Peres. Before Rosh Hashanah you have Slichas, many fast on Rosh Hashanah. Before Sukkot you have Yom Kippur. Before Shavuot you have the whole period of Sfira. And he said on other occasions that according to the Zohar, the period of Sfira is a period of Avelus Min HaTorah. It has nothing to do with the fact how Midrash Akiva died. The function of the Sfira is of Tahareh Mekliposeinu, Mekumaseinu. It's a time to demetire ourselves. And all Arichas, one was in a state of Tumah, in a semi-state of Avelus, he gave a whole Arichas Dvarim on that. Lifnei Hashem. Since it's Lifnei Hashem and Avelus is not Lifnei Hashem, since Avelus is tied to the Sassim, one is Tommy is not the bit at the end of the Beis Hamikdash, so obviously it's like Avelus in the sense that he's not Lifnei Hashem, he's staying away from Hashem. So he said he thinks that it's a beautiful minhag, like all the Yiddish minhagim, beautiful minhagim, and he doesn't see why it's necessary for the purpose of observing Yom HaTzmut to violate the minhagim of Sfir. In fact, I don't think his practice was to say Hallel on Yom HaTzmut when he used to daven with the palace over his head. So he was down in the minyan, so they said Hallel, so he would just, I understand that he didn't say Hallel, he would just stay in the minyan. On one occasion when he was davening across the street in the dormitory, so the students got a little carried away, they had one of the forms of observing Yom HaTzmut is to have Haftarah. I assume it's Haftarah on Yom HaTzmut. So when they wanted to lay in Haftarah, so Rav Soloveitchik walked out. And he walked out on the Haftarah, and he was so angry, I wasn't in Shir at that time already, I was saying my own Shir. So that day he was so angry about the fact that the students had been so carried away with their observance of Yom HaTzmut, so he started to pour his heart out. Instead of giving the regular shiur, he was pouring his heart out about the fact Yeah, we believe in religious Zionism, wonderful, we believe the Medina is a wonderful thing, but still you don't go crazy, you don't introduce all of the observances from, you don't say lift, and you don't read the Megillah, and you don't blow shofar, and you don't blow shofar, and you don't blow shofar. What do you mix everything in Zusammen? Everything. So Rabbi Finkelstein, after they heard that the Rav had exploded, he got so angry, so Rabbi Finkelstein came to the Rav. And then he asked, but here in the high school we have a minion, and we want to know, we want to say how. So does he disapprove of it? And if he doesn't disapprove, what would he recommend? There are things that the Rav thought about it for a while. And he said, if you want to say how, he recommends that you say Chatzi Hal Belib Racha after the Shir Shalom. Okay, you can think so. People can think so. But that's what he said. So he personally, I think, said that he didn't say any how. But this is what he recommended for those who do want to say how. He wasn't so keen on changing anything. He felt that if you're going to start introducing changes, that the Hamoinam won't understand why can't you change Shabbos and Kashrus and Taurus HaMishpacha also. After all, if you're updating the halachas, so let's change everything. He was very opposed until I used to daven all the time by Balabatim. I never davened in Yeshiva until later years. So Balabatim? Which shul by Balabatim says all the piyutim? In my shul where I daven, they never said all the piyutim. I mean, Kippur, they skip. Maybe I preached Sadera. The first time I ever done my Balabatim, said everything, it was in Boston. The Rav said every piyut in the book. And then on Tisha B'Av, he said every kin in the book. And my shul by the Balabatim, we didn't say all the kinners. Whoever said all the kinners? You say the major kinners that are written in a Hebrew that the people stand the chance of pronouncing and understanding. The kinners he can't even pronounce, he can't even understand. Oh, it's piyutim and the kinners, but the Ibn Ezra makes fun of our palace. What should I? We didn't say those. The Rav insisted no, and he said once a Maria. He shared for the Balabatim that he consulted his father about this, and his father said, you better not leave anything out. If you leave one thing out, the Balabatim's perception will be that you can change and you can do and you can sniff and do whatever you want, and then they'll want to know, why don't we do away with this, and let's leave out Muslims, and let's leave out Kir Shofar, and let's leave out the other thing. Let's change everything. I was told, I didn't hear this person, I was told that the Rav was opposed to Rabbanim holding a drush in the middle of the chuppah. If they want to speak, they should speak before the chuppah, even though I thought that I was a big genius, and I thought that I outsmarted the Rav, and I had a whole taina and shir when I learned for the Talmidim. I explained why that's the best place to hold the drush is in the middle of the chuppah, because in the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Tanakh, they used to have Eris, and then they have Nisun a year later. And then in the days of the Goyim, in the days of the Rishonim, is when they had the one stomach to the other. They had the Eris and the Yisun immediately following. So they have less Maimon, he calls the name of the time, and Rashi, that they introduced the Kriyas HaTzuba to have a Hafsot, that it should look funny. Why are you saying Bar Pi HaGofen? You just said Bar Pi HaGofen. There's Man HaTanah, there's Man HaGemara that said Bar Pi HaGofen on the coast of Erison. Then a year later they said Bar Pi HaGofen on the coast of Nisun. But once you move up to Nisun to be immediately following the Erison, so the second Bar Pi HaGofen has no room. So that's what that was. My many quotes that they introduced the Kriyas HaTzuba for Hafsot. I guess the Kriyas HaTzuba is pretty fast. It means that you should read HaTzuba slowly. Anybody who remembers the very Rabbi Silva, the kind of Rabbi used to read HaTzuba. He would give a dramatic presentation of the HaTzuba. He would read slowly and wait, and if anyone would be whispering, he would wait till they would stop whispering. So that's a Hafsoka. I thought if the rabbi is going to hold the drosha, what better place is it to hold the longer drosha and the Chazan should sing Shiraz over there? All the Hafsoka should be in the middle where the Rishonim said you got to make a Hafsoka. So I thought I was so smart, but then I understood. And then he told me, Rav Soloveitchik said, no, you can't do it in the middle. I said, what do you mean you can't do it in the middle? Not the rabbi, that's what the Rishonim said. So I think what he probably meant was, I don't think he meant other than he meant, like he said from his father's Rav, that where Rabbanim have to be careful not to introduce any Shinuyim, because the perception on the part of the Balabatim will be that we have the right to change everything, just ceremonies, and you can change the ceremonies at will, and then the people will want us to change everything else also. Other rabbi, the Rav, was very insistent on retaining old minhagim, even those that have been neglected already for hundreds of years. Like in Shulchan Aruch, I don't know if it's a minigadin, whatever, that on the Tainis Tzibur, the Mechaber quotes in the Mechilta, on the Tainis Tzibur, you have to have two people standing next to the Chaz and Lirin Chazaros Hashat. So the Magen Avraham says that our practice is not so on Yom Kippur, is a Tainis Tzibur, ain't Tainis Tzibur the Bavel, except for Yom Kippur. So on Yom Kippur, the Mechaber writes that you have to have two people standing next to the Chaz during the Tfilah, during Chazaros Hashat. So the Magen Avraham says our practice is not, so we only have the two people standing next to the Chaz during Kol Nidre, so that's why the Haftaros Nidorim. And then during the Ila, because Nila is a Tfilah Satinus. Nila is a Tfilah that's only recited, has nothing to do with Yom Kippur. Nila is recited in every time. So that's a Tfilah Satinus. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that we should go back to the old Minhagim, even though it hasn't been observed for so many years. And he insisted, and he In Boston they had it like that, and they introduced it here in the yeshiva also, that they have two people sitting next to the chazan during the Hazaras HaShas, by Shachar, by Musaf, and by Mincha as well. Or in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam quotes a minhag that by Noedim the Rabbanon, so the people, everybody is bowed down from the beginning to the end. And then the later Achrayim say that our minhag is not say just bowed down at the beginning and the end, and others say only the beginning. So even though that's not the kind of practice, so Soloveitchik used to observe the practice of bowing down for the whole Moedim from the beginning to the end, like the old minhag that was recorded in the Rambam. Or the Rambam has another minhag that the Mishnah Berurah says has already been neglected. When a person gets an aliyah, so he shouldn't look into the Sefer Torah, lest people will think brachas suvas by Torah. The Gemara Megillah has such a concern. So one time it says you have to close the Sefer Torah in order that no one should think that you're reading the brachas from the Sefer Torah. We don't pass them like that time. We pass them that there's nothing to worry about. So the Rambam says, well, Nikar Adi, you don't have to, but it's proper, yes, to worry about it. So therefore you should turn to the side. Instead of turning to this side, you should turn to that side. Shaki has a whole meaning. And then the Mishnah Berurah says the meaning is not so. Just leave the Sefer Torah open and you close your eyes. So the Rav used to have the practice, and all those who saw the Rav Maimonides followed that Yeshiva, and then he had that practice to turn to the left side. He liked to revert back to old Minhagim. In fact, he told us that in the early years, when he was first married, but later he explained why he changed his minhag. He said in the early years when he was first married, he had the practice to follow the minhag of the Balei HaTesis, that they would dab mincha first and then have the wife ben shlif to be choshish for the shita's bahag. So the bahag said that halakas neir sayideh, the balabasta is the kabbalist that said b'shad b'batocha for all of b'nei abayis. So if the balabasta is going to ben shlif, then you can't dab mincha, because once you makabal shabbos, once you tosef shabbos, you're not permitted to dab b'filas kol. So the practice of the Balei HaTesis was, I think the Magen Avraham quotes it from the Rishonim, that they would dab mincha and shul, and then they would send their little boys home to tell their mother that they should bench them. So he said that was his practice. He used to dab mincha the yechidus before his wife would bench them. And in later years he changed that practice. He had a lot of issues where he would revert back to home and home. In fact, I remember that he mentioned that usually on Erev Pesach, when you're holding by, when the rabbi is just about to sell the home, some balabas calls up the rabbi's left and he says he forgot to fashrag the chametz, he wants the rabbi to sell the chametz for him. So the din is that you don't have to make a Kabbalah's Kinyan, you don't have to sign a document. If you authorize a Shneir Balpeh, that's also sufficient. But the Rambam quotes in Hilchas Mechir, beginning of Hilchas Mechir, the Rambam writes that there was such a minig, and we still have the minig today, to make a Kabbalah's Kinyan when you appoint the Shliach, to make a Kabbalah's Kinyan with the Shliach, the rabbi gives a handkerchief to the Balabas, in exchange for which the Balabas gives the rabbi the prayer to be the Shliach. So if he's calling on the telephone, so he can't do it, so the Rav said no. He thinks he should try to observe the minhag, even if he's calling on the telephone. Well, how can you observe the minhag? So he had with a chochmah that the Rambam explains in Hilchos Mechira that what is this minhag all about? It doesn't make any sense. The Rambam is right that there are certain minyanim where a kinyan is not necessary and it's not even chal. So why do we make a kinyan if it's not even chal? It's not even nitvas in the kinyan. So the Rambam says the purpose of the kinyan is to demonstrate that he's appointed the shliach b'leiv shalom and b'leiv gomer, just to demonstrate that there's a full gemira style. So then the Rambam says l'ficha. What if the person appoints a shliach and he says, "Belev shalom ani yosef davazeh," I'm appointing you, belev shalom. Then there's no. Then the Rambam says there's no meaning to the minhag at all, and then it's useless to make a kinyan. There's no need to make a kinyan. So the Rav said, if you have a balabas that calls you up on the telephone and he can't come in person and he wants you to be a shliach, so ask him, "Are you doing this belev shalom? Are you appointing me with all of your heart? Are you appointing a shliach?" And if he says yes, then you yotze the minhag. Then you yotze. So he said the Rabbanim should try to be yotze the minhag. That the Rambam records an alta minhag to make Kabbalah's Kinyan, even though the Balabas calling on the phone, how can you observe the minhag? So he says no, because the Rambam said that satisfies the minhag. Just recalling, I remember the first year that I learned in the Rav Shir, they put up a sign on the bulletin board that the Rav will not come into Seishir until the third week of the term. All the students are expected to prepare till that Rav Amidala. Everybody else started Shir right away, and the Rav is not going to come until the third week. So I remember when we were learning Til Davov, they told us a story, and then later on I heard that it's not a true story. They told us a story that there was some shul in Boston, there used to be an Orthodox shul that had separate seating with a mechitza, and the Balabat and the board had a vote, and they decided to take down the mechitza and have mixed seating. And Rav Soloveitchik was, Bashtetzer, very unhappy about that. So that's how the story goes. He called up Rav Leibniz Silver, with whom he was in Purim, and he asked, would he be masking to sign an Isser? And they're going to print it in the newspaper. So I remember the Talmidim in the yeshiva said over the Rosh Hashanah, "Bless the Sabbath, Anissa, anytime." I don't know, that's the way the story goes. I don't know exactly where they heard the story from. So they printed this Easter in the newspaper. So eventually a blade of silver put an Easter on davening in the shul because they took down the lechit. So the story goes that the first night of Shabbat, the chairman of the board or the vice president, whoever was, got up in the shul and said, these old fogies are telling us that we have to have this lechit in the shul. We're not going to listen to these old rabbis. We're going kadima. We're going to be... we're going to go forward and we're going to advance and we're in the 20th century, we don't live in the ghetto and so on and so forth. And then that was before Slichas, the first night of Slichas, that was the first night before Slichas. And then around 2 o'clock at night he got a heart attack in his arm. So the Talmidim took it as a mitzvah, that it was a killa sof. So we were petrified. The Rav said to Rashi, we were petrified. This guy, how this man has the power. If he gets angry at us, wow. Just imagine to start off the year like that. And I was wondering to myself, what's the matter? Well, the other Rebbe start the first week. Who does this man think that he is? What do you mean we have this sign? Mr. Rebbe's put up a sign on the bulletin board. Oh, I used to learn over there, that table. So all the students have to prepare till Zabot Rabbi Soloveitchik cannot begin this year. And so what's not this? Everybody else starts from day number one. Manish Tanaha. Rosh Hashiva has any color, Rosh Hashiva. Then the Rav came in the third week and he understood why. He gave two shiurim on Tuesday and Wednesday. He was ready ahead of everybody else. The other said a shiur every day of the week, Sunday through Thursday. And they started the first week and they were ready 2.5 weeks into shiur. And the Rav gave the first shiur on Tuesday. He had already spanned everything. He had already covered all the material. I remember Eden, the first shiur, one of the first shiurim on Sanhedrin, we were learning Sanhedrin then. One of the first shiurim on Sanhedrin, the Rav had a big Yisai. I think that years later, in the Sunshu Sasmicha, that there's a dispute between the Rambam and Tosfos what the nature of the Din of Smicha is. So his main Yisoy was based on the Or Sameach. In one of the early Shurim, he mentioned the Or Sameach has a beer on the Rambam, that the Rambam's opinion is that Smicha is not the Din of Bez, it's rather Din of Haruah and Din of Sa, and then the Rav expanded upon that. The Rav on many occasions quoted many Achronim. Yesterday, Chaim Soloveitchik mentioned that his father in his library didn't have too many Sforim. He had a limited library. He clearly had a limited library, that's a fact, but in Europe, he used all of these Sforim. The Rav used to mention in the Shiur, Sforim Pasha for the members of his family. He used to mention the Minchas Baruch, everybody who learned Yeredeh by the Rav, remembers the Minchas Baruch. The first year in Hilchas Arubis would be to rip apart what the Minchas Baruch said. Minchas Baruch is always quoted by the stipler, he always quotes Minchas Baruch, was Baruch Karinka, I think it's from the Beis Rav. The Rav used to mention the Malbusha Yadid, who was a Rav, he was a Rav Chaslavich. The Rav lived in Chaslavich for a while. He used to mention in fact, the Rav told over the story the way his father was so eager to buy the sefer on Mudei Or that he would put away a few pennies every week until he finally scrounged up, until he finally got enough money to buy the sefer on Mudei Or, and he bought it, he enjoyed it so much. So in America, we have money, so I heard the story, I went right away and I bought the Mudei Or. I don't understand why his father liked the Mudei Or. I don't understand why he saved so much money. He said his father, kechap his father, the Mudei Or. Gevaldi, maybe he's also a relative. The Rav mentioned the Rav once came into the shiur when they were saying shiur my Bava Metziah. So he brought in the notebook of Rav Chaim, so he was reading the notes and he said, Rav Chaim quotes the sefer, Mayane HaChokm, he doesn't know what the sefer is. Mayane HaChokm is a tilpul sefer on Bava Metziah. The one who wrote 150 svarim on every Mikzoya Shabbat Torah, in every topic of the Torah. The Rav once told over a story, it happened that we discussed it last week, the Rav told over a story. By the way, Rabbi Zokharif said that when it comes to the Olam Emes, he's going to bring the Nadi Yehuda to his interior, that being marks to him 5 rubles. That the Nadi Yehuda writes a tshuva to the Bech of David, a Skarnish Rabbi who is in Constantinople, and he writes, Lekora Rab, Agon, I'm a first in Bokki, Yecharif, everything, such fancy titles. So the Rabbi Zokharif, Rabbi Zokharif saw the titles in the Nadi Yehuda Sefer, so he figured such a great coin, it's Kedai to buy a Sefer, so it cost him 5 rubles and he bought the Sefer Divrei Emes. It's a Svardish sefer, a topic that's nothing special, out of key, it's nothing special. So he said he's angry at the Nadi Yehuda, why he misled him with all the titles. When it comes to the Olam Emes, he's gonna have a tviya and the 5 rubles. So the Rav said that Rav Chaim right away responded to the Rabbi Zokharif about a certain issue, what's the din of Eid Echad Eid Surim, in a certain case by Noshim, and he said it's certainly good. Rav Chaim said, oh, look in the Divrei Emes. Obviously Rav Chaim looked in the Divrei Emes. I never heard of the Divrei Emes until the Rav told the story. Now I see, it sells in the store. I still didn't buy a Divrei Emes. It's in the stores. So obviously Rav Chaim had all these Svarim, and he looked in the Svarim. He used to say over. The Rav would quote Kiseidah from Eglei Tal. He didn't have it here. When we learned Sanhedrin, he used to quote the Zachsidish Yosef on Sanhedrin called Sanhedrin Tana. He used to quote from a lot of Svarim. He used to quote the Kseis and the Sidish Hashtes, he used to quote a lot of Svarim. In fact, I remember when the Kollel first started, the second Kollel, not from the Europeans in the early 1940s, in more recent years, when they started the Kollel, so I think we started learning the end of Bava Kamma. So I remember one evening the Rav came over and he said, oh, the end of Bava Kamma. He remembers learning Bava Kamma, that part of Bava Kamma. He said, this is the Smetana of Bava Kamma, the end, the best, the most Gishmaka part. He remembers learning this part of Bava Kamma with his father, with the Yamshel Shlomo. I had never seen a Yamshel Shlomo. Along with his father, Yamshon. Remember that time he told his boys, I understand that the Chazon Ish has a stake on Bava Kamma. He recommended we should look at the Chazon Ish. And he gave us his explanation why. He said, I don't think he ever met the Chazon Ish. He said that he heard that the Chazon Ish wasn't that much of a Balkishan. He wasn't that much of a genius. And whatever all that he accomplished was through pure Yigir, that he worked so hard. And he mastered Kala Terakula. He mastered so much. Everything he has on Zroyan, Kutchin, Taris, Noshin, Zikin, everything. He made a Z and he has what to say, comments, very penetrative comments on everything. And everything that he accomplished was through Yigir. So he said, that's Kedai, boys, you understand the safe of the Chazanish. We should get the Chazanish and say, we never got it. We never got the Chazanish. But that's what he recommended. He would encourage us. I remember originally when they formed the Kollel, the Rav thought that part of the Sidra HaKollel should be Tanya. And the Ramban al Atayra, every week we should learn the Ramban al Atayra. The Gemara in Erevin has a certain sharp comment, a certain critique, regarding Talmidei Chachamim who learn without a nigun. Kalashana b'lei zimra. All of our kasavim, v'gam anim esatlan kukim l'tayvim, v'mishpatim lo yishor. Yeah, what does it mean to be taken literally with a nigun? Okay, I have to learn with a nigun also. But I think perhaps included in the Gemara, I don't think this is Toshib Shad, but included in the comment that the Gemara makes is the following. You have some Talmidei Chachamim who are experts in halacha. They can formulate halacha, they can give you very sharp definitions. But when it comes to Agada, they don't have any ability at all. When it comes to Drush, it's Avgiret, they don't have the Kareha Drush. And this is a little bit the Sorum of Torah. You have to have halacha. You have to learn with a little bit of a nigun, with a little bit of a ruach ayin. You have to have agada also, and you have to have drush also. And the Rav would say agada, it's meridik. And the Rav would say drush, it's meridik shed a meridik. One of the Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and one of the Mizrahi, one of the head yeshivas pointed out to me, I'm not familiar, you told me that Rav Kook writes in one of his essays that all of Machshava, Jewish philosophy is important, but it all has to be based on halacha. If you just give machshava, that's not based on halacha. So how do you know that you know what you're talking about? So this Rosh Hashiva told me that he learned a lot of Sifri Rav Kook. I'm not familiar with all. He says Rav Kook rather doesn't do it so much. He says the one who does it is Rav Soloveitchik. The little that he writes, that's what he always did. The Rav would give a machshava, a rayon, would always be based on halacha. In Agadat, you can always float things and rush up your head. You can float and say whatever you want. You can float away in the clouds. But if you have a din, and the din indicates that this is the Hashkavas Atayra, and then when you want to expand that Hashkavas Atayra, it's in hypothesis, and then you can expand a little bit. But the Mokra and the Sherish has to be from something in the Halakha. There is a very beautiful essay that's printed in Rabbi Bezdin's book, Reflections of the Rav. The first volume is a collection of 20 essays. 20 drushes that the Rav gave. So there's one knockout drusha that the Rav gave on Agadatir in Sanhedrin Dav Zayin. And Dav Adam and Bezer, the Gemara talks about Din and Pshor, that he committed to Pshor. Then on Dav Zayin, the Gemara gave that back. A ganz list of Agadatir, 7 members in the Gemara, where the Gemara says, Hahu da havi ko ozo the Yoma. But there was a fellow who always used to say a certain Pisgam Amami, used to have a certain statement. And then the Gemara quotes an Amora who will back it up from a pasuk in Tanakh. So what's going on over there? Why did the Gemara feel the importance of quoting a pasuk in Tanakh to demonstrate that the folk saying that this Pashat the Balabas said had any significance, that it had any source? And why does this appear in Sanhedrin in the middle of the Sugya Pshura? What's the connection? So that's what Soloveitchik explained, and it's written over beautifully. The essays there are written over very good. I would recommend it. It's written so clearly. An intelligent high school student can understand as well, but it's not on a low level. An older person will also see depth in the essence. They're very beautiful. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that Pshara is also a dintar. That's what he said in the Shiur. Pshara is also a dintar. Except that din is a dintar, but your paskin is based on din. Pshara is a dintar, but your paskin is based on the Shnei Mishura Sadin. Who is to determine what the Shnei Mishura Sadin is, what Yeshua dictates? The Seichel HaAdam. Who says that the person has Seichel to know what's right? That's what the Gemara has, the whole assumption that Jews have an intuition, to have a certain common sense to judge what is Yeshua. why should this be so? So Rav Soloveitchik quoted the Maimer in the Agadah in the Gemara in Nibbe, which Rav Soloveitchik used to quote every so often in many drashas to bring out different ideas. But the Gemara says that before the baby is born, whether it's a baby boy or a baby girl, before a baby is born, the Malach teaches the baby kol ha-perikuda, and then the Malach makes the baby forget. So if the Malach is going to cause the baby to forget, so what's the significance of teaching kol ha-perikuda? So that's what the Rav said, in order that when the baby is born, he already has a natural inclination towards Abbas Hashem, towards Shmiras HaMitzvah. So the Rav quoted that the Rambam writes in the end of Perek Beis, that the Gerushin, that if a man doesn't want to give his wife a get, and the Halacha says that he's supposed to give his wife a get, so the Mishnah says, Makanoso, Achayayma Rotani, you beat him up till he says Rotani. So the Gemara in Cheska Sabbatim asks, what good is that? He doesn't want to, so what good is it that you beat him up? So the Rambam quotes one of the answers that the Gemara gave, happens to be a difficult Rambam, we should have passed on the other answer, but the Rambam quotes the one answer that the Gemara gave, that his true inner self really wants, all along he wants. Now, but there's a pseudo personality, his real ani really wanted all along, because every Jew really wants deep down in his heart, wants to do Ratzon Hashem. This is what the Balatani calls an Abba Hamsuteris, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rav is very fond of quoting over this Balatani, with this Rambam, with this Gemara, with the Malach. He quoted several occasions that I heard. And Navas is a pseudo personality, his Yetzirah doesn't let him do the Ratzon Hashem. So then we beat him up, and then he says, Ratzani! He's got rid of this false personality, and the real Ani is now coming out, and he's saying what's really so. The real Ani really wants to give the get. He really wants to do Ratzon Hashem. By the Goyim, there's such a concept of tabula rasa. When a baby is born, he's born with no innate knowledge, no innate tendencies. Yeah, that's by Goyim, that's true. But by us, it's not so. We don't have tabula rasa, because the Malach has inculcated in us, by teaching us Torah, he has inculcated the Ratzon to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the source of the Abba HaMesu Torah. And the only way to get to that Abba HaMesu Torah is by learning Torah. That's what the Rav said, that by the Vilna Gaon, I never saw this anywhere, I never heard it anywhere else. The Rav said, by the Vilna Gaon in Vilna, the minig was, it used to rope off the bima on Simchas Torah, and they used to have the hatoket. Why? So he said, the Gaon said that the dancing on Simchas Torah with the Simchas Torah around the bima is really dancing around the Shechina. And the pasuk that we say in Atah HaReisa, the Amar Bayom Havu, Hirel, Kenu Zek, Yivilo, Yoshienu, etc. That's the key pasuk in the Atah HaReisa. The Gemara in the end of myself, as Taina says, that Lossi Lava, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a machal, the tzaddik, machal means a round circle, where the tzaddik will be dancing around and pointing. That means telling that the Amar of the Yetzba will be pointing towards the Shechina. Will be in the middle, and they will say, Hirel, Kenu Zek, Yivilo, Yoshienu. So we today make this dance, Hashem Ha'asid, we're preparing for the dance that's going to be Lossi Lava. So when we're dancing around the bima, the Shechina is supposed to be in the middle. So the Golagon was marked again. During the Hakofis, they should rope off the bima that nobody should walk there. The Shechina is there, so it's not proper that the Gos of Adam should be there. So the Rav added on to this, me delay. He said, so why do you dance with Sifrei Torah around the Shechina? So he said, because all of the points around the circle represent the ideas that all the points are pointing towards the center. So the only way to reach the Shechina is by learning Torah. And he added on, a minig, Agabi minig, he said, why is it that the other days of Sukkot we have to say, but they're in the middle and we dance around with the Dalet minig? He said, it's a hemshech of a minig. The minig is that only through Shmiras HaMitzvahs can a person succeed to get to the center of the circle, through Liman HaTorah. If a person wants to learn Torah without Shmiras HaMitzvahs, he will not succeed in Liman HaTorah. Liman HaTorah is a different type of a discipline. And only through Liman HaTorah can a person succeed to get to the center of that circle, to get close to the Shechina. So this is what the Rav explained in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Zayin. The Gemara quotes the Tizgamim Amamiyim, the folk sayings that the people had. And the Gemara says the folk sayings that Klal Yisrael say must be rooted in an intuition that they got from this Abba HaMesu Torah, from the fact that the Malach taught them Kol HaTorah Kula, and they have this innate love toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu, proper hashkofes. Naturally, the moment these proper hashkofes, that we don't accept tabula rasa as far as B'nai Yisrael are concerned. So he said that's the Kavanas HaGemara, that's where the Gemara felt compelled to find the currents in Tanakh to demonstrate that these Tizgamim were correct. And that's why the Rav used to consider Minhagim a very serious thing. Very serious thing. Minhag Yisrael Torah doesn't, he used to say, Minhag Yisrael Torah doesn't only mean that you're obligated to observe it. Minhag Yisrael Torah means that it's something that you have to learn, like Torah Hiblu and Anitzorach. You have to try to break your head to understand what the minhag is based on. He used to spend a lot of his shiurim. The Chaz Rav were all shiurim. Of course, I'm not sure the deacon there aren't too many minhagim, but in Yoni or Achan Yeredeya, he used to spend a lot of time to explain what the minhagim are based on. And he was not too quick to change any minhagim. That's the Mamish day. Rabbi Natam says the minhag is basically his gehenim. Sometimes the minhag is a minhag toys and you're not permitted to follow it. But unless it's Mamish ascertained as a minhag toys, So we assume that the meaning must have a very good cherish, and it's something meaningful. The Rebbe, of course, pointed out that there are two different types of minhagim that shouldn't be confused. Sometimes you have a meaning that develops from the people. That's this type of meaning that we assume that Klal Yisrael has this type of intuition to figure out something that's really a Ratzon Hashem, that the Rebbe Shlomo really wants. Then you have a different kind of meaning that's instituted by the Chachamim, which is really along the lines of Gzeira or Takonah. Take, for example, that's what the Rebbe explained on the Shemesh or Golis, there is a dispute and then we show you whether it's a minhag or a dindur rabbanan. So the Rebbe once asked, if Yom Tov Sheni Shal Golis is only a minhag, so how come we don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov Sheni? The Shleim, if it's a din derabbanan, so the understand, you can say Yesh Kefir HaChachamim, Lakadom and Atar B'Shevi Al Tassis, and HaChamim and Tafan, and not to like tefillin. But it's only a minhag. That's like minhag America, where people don't wear tefillin. Minhag America, they don't keep Shabbos, Kashrus, Tafan, Shabbos. What kind of a minhag is that? A minhag, not to like tefillin. Are you talking about kind of a minhag? So the Rebbe said, no, it doesn't mean that kind of a minhag that stems from the people. It's a minhag that stems from the HaChamim. He said there's a different kind of a minhag. That's the minhag. Rav Elbel talked about this in the Sefer. The Rav quoted the same Rambam. He wasn't familiar with what Rav Elbel had said. He used to joke about that from time to time. He used to say over something from his father on the Yoni Kachim. And then he said he heard this from his father. Koded Matan Torah. It means before Rav Elbel was saying Shiva. Before Rav Elbel was saying Shiva. He heard this from father. Koded Matan Torah. So he wasn't familiar. He wasn't familiar with what the Rav Chaim Sefer either. He didn't know about the Sefer. He heard about that. He didn't know the Rav Chaim from the Sefer. Say what he heard from his father. A lot of times it didn't correspond exactly to what it said. It was a totally different presentation, a lot of details. So Rav Elbel also, he didn't know what it said, Rav Elbel said, but he quoted the same Rambam. So the Rambam says that if one violates a minhag, he's in violation of Laisasur. So the Rav explained that's a different kind of a minhag, not a minhag that stems from the people. It's a minhag that the Chachamim introduced, and it carries the Balabatim to observe. So that type of minhag is something like a Takana of the Rabbam, and that there would be a Laisasur. That's what the Rav said. That even though we show him to say that Yom Hashem Shal Golis is a minhag, doesn't mean that it's a minhag that the people started, but it means that it's a minhag that was introduced by the Chachamim and encouraged everyone to follow it. The Rav didn't like to change minhagim. Just on rare occasions, he used to encourage the Rabbanim during Aseres Metshuva. The Rav, for many, many, many years, used to give a brush, often knockout brush, a kinis tshuva, hundreds and hundreds of people would come from all over. So he always used to encourage the Rabbanim to reintroduce the reciting of Slichas during Chazaros HaShatz. We only say Slichas on Arma Zorin, we only say Slichas on Meirid, on Yom Kippur, and during Neilah. And the printer left out the Slichas by Shachris and Musaf and Neilah. And Dor HaShulchan complains about that. He says the printers just wanted to save money. They wanted to charge the same money for the book, and save money on printing all the pages. So they left out the Slichas. He says there's no reason to leave out the Slichas. Until very recently, the Slichas were printed in the Machzor. And the publisher, the printers didn't ask anybody's rishus to leave it out. So that's why Rav Soloveitchik also used to complain that it's not right, that really we should reintroduce the slichas, that it would cause a major war. But the same thing about Halal Al Pesach, he felt that the more correct practice was yes to recite Halal with the bracha, the shul, the minyan. He said unless it will make a major disruption in the shul, unless it will make a mega machlokes, he thought that the rabbanim should be mishana, the minyan of the kelis. We should introduce it. The Rebbe used to speak about the Rishpanda telling all his story about Duchening on Shabbos. He said when he first came to Boston, he was the Rebbe, I don't know all the details, but he said he was the Rebbe of a shul there. And the meaning of the shul was that they wouldn't Duchen on Shabbos. So he said they weren't going to Duchen. And he was very young and very fiery. And he let them know who's the boss, and he let them know that they have to Duchen or else. So he says he won the fight and he lost the shtel. That before Yom Kippur he was fired already. And he lost the job. I don't know exactly, but he's still a boss. I don't know exactly, he had a different job. I don't know exactly the historical details. So he told us in Shiri, he said, boys, make sure when you go to the rabbinate, make sure that the people duchen, even when Yom Tov falls on Shabbos. But you don't have to be Moisa Nefesh. If it means losing your shtetl, it's Ad Kedei Kach. You don't have to fight about that. The Rav spent much time giving shiurim on Dinam de Rabbanon. In Maria, he spent many, many years learning Masechet Brachas, and then after that learning Masechet Megillah, and here in Yeshiva also. He said, Shiur Masechet Brachas to the Talmidim. So he explained that one shouldn't think that learning Dinim Derabbanon is only a mitzvah of Talmud Torah Derabbanon, and then Atar is Bittul Torah. And Atar, you're learning nothing. You're wasting your time. So what did he waste all those 11 years in Maria, spending his time on Brachas? So Dinim Derabbanon. So he said, no. And he gave this distinction, which he alluded to on different occasions, that there are two parts to Torah. There's the Hefter Shel Torah, and then there's the Chayvus HaGavra. The Dinim Derabbanan, although the Chayvus HaGavra to observe these, is only with the Rabbanan, the obligation to observe these Derabbanan, is only with the Rabbanan, but the Hefter Shel Torah, it becomes Min HaTorah. It becomes a Chelik of the Torah Shel HaTorah, Min HaTorah. As far as the mitzvah, fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, one would have a Kiyum HaMitzvah Deraisa, Talmud Torah, even if he only learned Din of the Rabbanim, just to give a mashal, a mazal adayim, he referred to the Gemara in Erevin in the first paragraph, Daf Yud Gimel, where the Gemara says that Eilu li Eilu, Divrei Elokim Chayim, speaking about all of the many disputes between Bishamah and Silo. So the Gemara says, even though Bishamah's opinion is not accepted, not only not accepted, it's absolutely rejected. The Gemara says in Brochas and Daf Lamed Vav, Bishamah v'moch misilo ein mishnah, it's not even considered a sophic kodol, then he gave the Kolamekel Dorot, Aloch Kamas of the Chutzlot. Nonetheless, the Gemara says in Erevin that one who studies Bishamah's opinion is not in violation of Bittul Torah. Even though you know in advance that this whole sugya is just going to be Bishamah, no Bishamah at all. The whole sugya is only Bishamah, you're spending all of your time understanding Bishamah's view, that doesn't constitute Bittul Torah, because what Bishamah said, there's no Chavis Agavre, Aloch Kamas, we absolutely don't pass him like the Bishamah. But still, it's a Chavis Agavre. And because all of the din of the Rabbana become Chelik HaTavish of Alpem and Alpera, so that's why the Chachamim always felt compelled to make Tachan of the Rabbanan in the fashion of called the Tikkun Rabbanan came the Raisa Tikkun. To make a Tachan of the Rabbanan, it has to fit in with rules and regulations, it has to be extension of din of the Raisa. So the Rabbah often stels a fault and assure him on a din the Rabbanan and give a whole pilpul and explain what, from a din the Rabbanan, he would show what the din the Raisa was. I remember he said a fantastic shiur and the din the Rabbanan of Tevel, that after Miruah, before he has Bnei Abayis, so when Atera wanted to admit it to eat Tevel, but the Rabbanan wanted to didn't eat the Tevel, Achilas Kevel. He wanted to admit it to eat Achilas Aroi. He says, where do you find such a din? And he said, the Rabbanan, Macholis Asturis and Rabbanan, is only also Achilas Kevel, Mut Achilas Aroi. They have also the Kolo of the Rabbanan, they have Shemar Agid with the Rabbanan, they have so many Surah of the Rabbanan. You should make a distinction between Achilas Kevel, Achilas Aroi. I've never heard of such a thing. My the pshat is called the Tikkun Rabbanan came the Raisa Tikkun. This is the reflection of what the din the Raisa is on Tevel. Why is there a din the Raisa that you have to have Yes Bnei Abayis? The answer is because whatever you eat before Yes Bnei Abayis is always labeled as Achilas Aroi. Whatever one eats after Yes Bnei Abayis is always labeled as Achilas Kevel. So that's the Hagdor of the din the Raisa. Called the Tikkun Rabbanan came the Raisa Tikkun. That was an extension of the din the Raisa. Some of the Rabbanan they introduced, but there are other things that are Kaveh. I mean, I'll tell you the only thing that's Kaveh is Yes Bnei Abayis. Rabbanan, they said that Mekach is Kaveya, and Melech is Kaveya, and Shabbos is Kaveya, and Bishul is Kaveya, and all the other things that are Kaveya. You're not allowed to eat Achilas Kevel and Tevel. What's the din the Raisa? And Nigdash Dov points out there's a Pirush HaMishnayis LaHarambam where it says that. At the time we didn't know that, but later on, years later, we found the Rambam writes like that, the whole book from the beginning to the end. The Rav said this on many situations, on many cases. He would explain how the din of the Rabbanan reflect din of the Raisa, and he would explain why it has to be so, because in every discipline, you work with different categories of thought. If you're dealing with physics, or you're dealing with chemistry, you can't start talking about sines or cosines or integrals. Mathematics has its own language. Every discipline has its own categories of thought, has its own terminology, has its own concept. So when you're dealing with halacha, you have to have halachic concepts. You can't introduce some non-halachic concepts. So when the Rabbanan make din of the Rabbanan, it also has to be with halachic concepts. I remember the Rabbi saying over the Rav Chaim, and the Kotem Shehgiyah Lo'edah Safut, this doesn't appear, Rav Baruch Be'er quotes this Rav Chaim, but when you read Rav Baruch Be'er Kiddushin, this dummy wouldn't be able to make heads or tails of Rav Baruch fully written there. And many people who read it from the Birch HaShmur will swear that Rav Baruch Be'er said one thing. But after you hear the shiur from the Rav, and then you read Rav Baruch Be'er afterwards, then the Stam reads better the way the Rav says, like Dr. Lane told over the story yesterday. After the Rav said the whole shiur, and then he said, now read the Chiddush HaRan, now it reads a little better. So the Rav Baruch Be'er quotes from Rav Chaim, what the Rav said over like this. There's a din of kotten shehigiyah lo'edah saputas, even though the child is not bar mitzvah, and the kotten is a lot bar das, how can he make mekach a memkar? It's not chal lo kinyon and needs das. So the Rav Baruch made a takon, he can make kinyon. So the Rav said, b'shem Rav Chaim, how can that be? Where the Chachamim Chassidish Rebbe is that they can make a moifes, they can give the child that's not bar mitzvah das? It's a chalam bar das. How can they make a moifes and give him das? That was the Loshin. He said in Yiddish. No, the Torah says they didn't come up. They cannot give the child das if he's a chalam bar das. They said to make a kinyan, midirabonon, there's no need for das, it's enough with kavon. But the cotton has kavon, and he gave a whole arichas on this. Rav Chaim has a little even mechalitza on this. But even our cotton is a chalam bar das, but he is a bar hach, he has kavon. And then the Loshin just says, that you need kavona, a rotzim, a machshove, so kavon is a bar hochi. Rav Chaim has sugis to indicate that this is so. So then Rav Chaim continues to explain, but that's only shayach, that's only feasible by medra amur, by all other kinyonim. But if you want the kavon shigil or esaputis to make a kinyon suder, by kinyon suder, Rav Chaim explained the beer in the Rambam, there is no maisi kinyon at all. The symbolic act of giving over the handkerchief is just a symbol to demonstrate that there's a gemiras das, and the gemiras das accomplishes the kinyon. So if the kavon is a labadas, why does that halabadas? How can a chacham say over here by Suter that the kohen can make a kinyan Suter with kavon along without das? The whole kinyan consists of das. By another kinyan, hagbora, meshicha, kesef, something else, where the kinyan consists of the maisi kinyan and you need das in addition, that it should be a meaningful maisi kinyan. So the chacham can say, no, no, we'll make all over here. You don't need das, kavon is enough. But the whole kinyan consists of das. So they're going to say, what are they going to say? The kid has das. He doesn't have das. They can't make a maisis. This is one of the applications that they wrote out. It stands out very vividly in my mind when the Rav spoke at Columbia, when on the occasion of the Catholic Church, the, I don't know exactly the Lashonis in their Avodah Zarah, but they had a, whatever a convention of their Galochim in the Vatican to decide that the Jews are no longer to be held guilty. Together in peace and harmony, and we should be a little more friendly. They wanted to show friendship towards the Jews. So Rav Soloveitchik gave a major address at that time, I remember, at Columbia University, and he explained at that time what the pshat in this psak din was. What are they driving at? So he said, what does it mean that the Catholics hold the Jews responsible for killing Osa Huish? Are they ridiculous? We were the ones who killed Osa Huish. Didn't they say Leimer that the Jews killed them? Those are the Jews who lived 2,000 years ago. What has it got to do with us? So he said, the terrorists is that when they say that the Jews killed Osa Huish, it means that we continue to kill them today. That's just a melitza. They don't mean those who are Mavega Harget Osa Huish. When you say you don't believe in their Avodah Zarah, that's, in their language, that's the same as saying that you killed their God. Not believing in their Avodah Zarah means that you killed them. So what does it mean? Why are they prepared to absolve the Jews of the guilt of killing Osa Huish? So he explained that there, according to their understanding, there's going to be a second coming in the year 2000, but there's a condition, there's a hitch, that also wishes that Yechayenu Miyomoyim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about this in Peretredic. There was a whole dispute about the Kivan HaKakomim, how to understand the Pasuk Yechayenu Miyomoyim. So the Christians also had their own shot. The Yoshka is coming back after 2,000 years, in the year 2000. So they hold, part of their belief is that also Huish will only be turned from the dead if all of the Jews will believe in him, if all of the Jews will be converted to Christianity. But if the Jews will still be rejecting him, so then he's not going to come back. So the worry, never, the worry is not going to come back from the dead. So they're stepping up at this, that was around a long time ago, 30 years ago. What was it? At that time they started pouring in millions and millions of dollars into missionizing, into missionary activities all over the world, American, Arizona, all over the world, to get as many Jews to convert to Christianity as possible. So the Rav said, that's what it means. That's what it means. They're absolving us of the guilt of killing Yoshke, because they're going to see to it that we're not going to be guilty, they're going to see to it that we're all going to embrace him. We're all going to convert to Christianity. So he said, that's terrible. We shouldn't give Mayashikar for that. They want to shmad up all the Edens. It's ridiculous. And he said, how do I know that this is pshat in their statement? So he said, at that time, Father taught me how to read in between the lines. He says, he reads what they have in the newspaper. He says, he reads it, and he understands that that's what it means. I remember several years ago, we used to have a Rebbe in Yeshiva, Rabbi Zerubbabel Shushan. So he was very close to the Rav. From years ago, he was one of the older Talmidim, from the early Talmidim. So he wrote up, before he passed away suddenly, he wrote up a few pieces from Osa Leitchik, which were printed, I think, in Hamavaster or the commentator. Six or seven pieces. I think this was one of them. That one night, after the Rav finished the Shira Maria for the Balabatim, there was a fantastic Shira on Agadatim, Brochus. The Rav spent so much time explaining every Agadatim. It's halacha, even if the Balabatim don't understand, they'll understand that it's halacha. But they don't understand. But in Agada, if they don't understand, they'll think that the Gemara is saying stupid things. So the Rav used to spend an awful lot of time to explain all the Agadatim, all the chalomis, and the end of Brochus. The Gemara interprets all the dreams. He would spend many, many hours explaining every cholam, why this cholam means this and this means this, and every agadatim. And sometimes there were just fantastic explanations, both from the Mar Levuchim and from the Kuzari and from all over the place. Everything that is at his access, he would quote the other Mar Chazal, other agadatim, just in order to explain this agadatim. So on one occasion, Rabbi Shushan Zuchon Aruch asked the Rav, where did you get the tradition to interpret like that? Where did you get it from? So the Rav asked him, why don't you ask me that about my shiurim and halachim? Where did I get that from? So Rav Shushan said, well, more or less, we can figure that out. You know, the Rishonim have a little bit, and the way people think today, it's a modern way of thinking. So we have a little bit, so you have a little better than us. You can understand the difference. But they are good at it. Mamash, like Yesh Meyayin. Where did he get it from? So he said, no, my father taught me how to read in between the lines. He taught him how to read in between the lines in Halacha. He taught him how to read in between the lines in Agada. And he taught him how to read in between the lines in the Catholic documents also. The Rav used to analyze everything. Yesterday, Rav's son, Shri Rav Soloveitchik, concluded his remark by mentioning what a strong bond there was between the Rav and his talmidim, that there was such an attachment that was somehow more so than with other talmidei chachamim in an unusual way. So I remember, I seem to remember on one occasion I was very young, I don't know, there must be tapes of this. I remember when I was very young, the Rav held at Rosh at one of the Chag HaSmichos in the auditorium, and he spoke about why a Talmid Chacham is called a Chover. Chover and Tzarek HaSroa, Tzarek HaZmai, all the name of Chover. So he quoted the Tirish HaMishnai Slaha Rambam on Pirkei Avos, where the Rambam speaks about Chover, he spoke about different types of Chover. So the Rav spoke at that time about why, when one transmits the Maser to somebody else, why is there such a strong bond? And on other occasions, on later occasions, he also spoke about this. If I'm not mistaken, this is also written up in Rabbi Bezdin's second volume of the Rosh Hashanah Rav Soloveitchik's Greater Rav. This was written up in one of the issues of Parusa, of the Rabbinic alumni, I think Rabbi Nerf Goldstein wrote this up. And the Rav on different occasions will speak about this. And it gives he once depicted when he was an old man and he comes into the shir and he can come walk into the shir and he comes in and he sees these young faces, the young bokrim. He says, what do I have to offer to these guys? These guys are so young and they're so vibrant and I'm an old man, I'm falling apart. And he sits down and we're all staring at him and he starts reading the Gemara and he gets stuck in the Rashi and he says the Kasha against Rashi. And all of a sudden the Rambam comes and the door opens and the Rambam walks into the room and the Rambam helps us out and shouts in the Gemara. And all of a sudden the Shach comes in and the Shach screams at the Rambam. And he says, what are you talking about? And then all of a sudden the Nesidus comes in and he defends the Rambam. And then my grandfather comes in and he argues with the Nesidus. And then one of the young boys pipes up and he starts saying, then another boy says, eh? And then by the end of the shir, everybody's involved. It's a Lebedik and Maser from all the generations, from 2,000-3,000 years, from the Tkuvah Satanoim, till the Yamaroim, till the Rishon, till Achren, until today, everyone is involved. And then he becomes the Rav, said he became invigorated as Mamish and Metzias. The people saw it many times, both in the yeshiva and in Maria, and the lady is the Rav was so shvach. And he would come to say the shir, he would a lot of times start the shir, and he could come, correct place to pronounce the words. But then as he kept on saying the shir, he became so invigorated at the end of the shir. He had peace. So he was speaking about this type of concept of chover, of a vine that connects one generation to the other, and he referred to the Mishnah in Eidias, that speaks of the Hemshech Hador as the connecting link between one generation and the other. I think, I remember on one occasion the Rav spoke for the Rabbinic alumni, I'm not mistaken, must have been in their point of view, a very beautiful talk. At that time he was explaining, I spoke many times, I mentioned it in my shiur, he spoke at that time about the fact that some professor from the seminary had published in a book that the thing that prompted the Tanoim to be maple so much in the construction of a sukkah, to say lovewood, and to say shtayim kochos mishlishis afi l'tefach, and to say gurachis and gurasik, was because in the days of the Tanaim there was a scarcity of wood, and Eretz Yisrael weren't enough trees, and there was a shas hatak, so they had to be maple, they had to be maple, and to say that all these coolers in the sukkah doesn't have to be so built up with so much wood. So the Rav said that per se, he doesn't consider the person of the curse just because he said that. Nita lay yomer, could be that was the motivating factor that prompted the Chachamim to get together and hold their and break their heads in order to figure out to give Zechan Eitzah what to be made of. But he says that doesn't explain the formula, why it works. You can't just say there's a Shas HaPchak that's going to work. Shas HaPchak doesn't help. So he gave a mashal Ma'adar Adayma that during the period of the Second World War, the American government realized that the Nazi Germans were working on atomic energy. They all had the physicists. And if Khalil, they would have developed atomic bomb before America, they would have controlled the whole world. So the American government got a whole bunch of Einstein with the geniuses together, and they made the atom bomb, and then they saw to it that they won the war. So what prompted the American government to make the atom bomb? Shas HaTak fighting with the Nazis. So if you want to understand how come atomic energy works, it's simple. There was a war with the Nazis, and they had to make a conference, and they got together. Shas HaTak said, man. So he said, that's the historical background, but that doesn't explain the formula. You have to give a formula to explain it. So he said, the same as the Gemara says, Mishum Miguna Kili Berabonim. What do you mean, Shum Miguna Kili Berabonim? So what's the pula? There was a Makam Migun, the Goyim were killing a lot of Jews, and men disappeared, a woman of Rabbunah, so there was a Shas HaTak. So that was the motivating factor that prompted the Tanoim to get together and try to be Metakeh Seitzah, to give Zechan Eitzah, what can you come up with?
So they came up, the Gemara says, so they came up with a din. There is a din in other areas of Allah and Chulin and Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara has a klal, and most of it is Lo Meshakri Inshu. The Gemara has other klalim when you have Isha Daiko Mitzvah, when you have a lot of Daikonis, it's a Ruba Delay to come up. So the Gemara came up, the Gemara says the Tanoim came up with something. They came up with a formula. The formula has to explain how the halacha functions. Just to say that there's a Shas Adchak, and therefore if Mishum Megin Akilu Barabona, that's just the historical background, but that doesn't explain what the formula is. So he said, it's Nitan Layom, as far as these skins are, it could well be that there was a scarcity of wood in the days of the Tanoim. And they felt, look, if we're not going to give some kind of a kula, the people just won't be able to sit in sukkah. So they convened a conference of Rabbanim, and they said, whoever has an idea should come up with it. Someone must have, perhaps someone came up with an idea and said, look, this is a din of Lovet and Hilchos Shabbos, so even though there it's a din of Mechitir, it's a din of Daifin, and maybe it's not exactly the same. So they, maybe Hachmaskin, maybe that's what happened. They discussed, and they came to the conclusion that Hu Adinami and Hilchos Sukkah, and there was a din of Gurachas and Gurasik and Hilchos Shabbos. So maybe they were tilfuling whether they should apply that to Hilchos Sukkah. They came up with that also. But he says, that doesn't explain the formula. The formula has to be worked out over here. The historical background is Chicago information. I remember there used to be a course here, maybe there still is, a course in the college for the non-science majors. I took the chemistry course for the non-science majors. So they used to give the history of chemistry, what prompted them, what brought about this. Someone had a dream with the molecules dancing in a circle. I already forgot the whole, what the atom, what the thing, what element it was. But five molecules dancing in a circle in a shape of a hexagon, whatever. That doesn't explain what the essence of the thing is. This is the historical background. So the same over here. So I remember on that occasion, when the Rav held that long drasha, that was some beautiful drasha, that should really be, I don't know if it's printed. So on that occasion, he was reading from the Rambam and the Hakdamah to the Yad HaChazokah. So the Rambam writes that Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching the Torah to Pinchas and Elazar and Yeshua ben Nun. And then he was Meister the Torah to Yeshua ben Nun. One line after the other. The first page in the Rambam Hakdamah, he said, it's very striking, Moshe, very strange. He just said, the Rambam just said that he taught the whole Torah to everybody, and especially to Pinchas and Elazar to Yeshua. And he said, and he was Meister the Torah to Yeshua, Bitzivehu Olo. He just said he taught it to them, so he said, no, a Rebbe can have many Talmidim, and everybody listens, and there those who are sharper than others, but then the Mesiras HaTorah Shebaalpeh is only given to one or two, it's not given to everybody. So that's what the Rambam said, the one who became the Baal HaMasor was only Yeshua ben Nun, and he gave an Arichas, because he was Meshamish Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo Yitzetei Neyachol Piri, he was Meshamish, Gadol Shemushi, Yosem Limudach, he was Meshamish Moshe Rabbeinu more than the others. So the Rav said that there are many people who are great Talmid HaChachamim, but they're not necessarily considered Baalei HaMasor. Baalei HaMasor were those to whom was given over the whole big bundle, the big package of the Torah Shebaalpeh. So many of us always had the feeling that the Rav had this tremendously bulky, heavy Masorah, which consisted that he had from his father, from his grandfathers, and from other Goyim. He didn't only talk to the two grandfathers. He spoke to other great people as well. The Rav used to tell us in Shir, he spoke to Baruch Be'er, and he said, he was little Ben Ishtar, Baruch Be'er knew every Taisus in Gittin Baal Peh. He was he spoke to Rav Shimishka, he spoke to Rav Henechegish, he spoke to Rav Chaim Oizer a lot in learning. He spoke to many Gedolim, there were many people around. So Rav Soloveitchik, Zohar Rocha, had this tremendous Masorah from his Rabbeim, a Masorah which consisted of Gemara, and you started this in Hashkofer, and Hanhogis, and Psokim, and a style how to Paskin, not just particular Psokim, and particular Hanhogis, a style how to Paskin, had his own style, his own unique style, and many stories. Yesterday, Dr. Tversky pointed out that a lot of the Rav's Machshava is based on a lot of the stories. The stories that he used to tell over the years, he never sat down on one occasion to tell over 100 stories, but over the years he told over many hundreds of stories. Many of those stories were in connection with Halacha, to give the historical background of Tshuvah, or some Chicago stories about certain halachic debates or disputes that got people interested in learning. Many of you are familiar with Rabbi Rakevich from Eretz Yisrael. So he published an essay about the Kliba Get, and he writes an introduction. He was so inspired to research the topic, because the Rav made it so fascinating in Shia. The Rav made it like a mystery about what was going on with that Kliba Get. So that's what inspired him to go read up all the Svarim and to write an essay about it. The Rav used to make many issues in Halacha very fascinating just by stories. So he had a peckle of stories that was part of his Masorah, stories that in connection with Halacha, and stories which demonstrated Hashkofe, points of living Hashkofe in life, how Dolim, how Goyim, and had tzaddikim throughout all the generations, lived out certain yisoides in Hanhagim. And part of the Rav's Masorah was Minhagim. He would say all the Minhagim from Brisk, Minhagim from other communities, and he would explain many of the Minhagim, beautiful Minhagim, that most people today never heard of. And the Rav, different from many other people, different from most of the many, there were many great Talmid Chachamim. The Rav, more so than others somehow, he had the distinct sense that he was really one of the Balei HaMasorah. He was transmitting this Masorah. Of course, he couldn't pass on the whole Masorah. If he give one shiur and try to give everything that he knows on that Gemara, so the students would walk away with nothing. They wouldn't be able to understand anything. So like Dr. Borsky said yesterday, the Rav always had to be mitzamtzim himself. You know, if he wouldn't be mitzamtzim himself, if he wouldn't restrain himself, we would have gotten lost. We wouldn't understand anything. So he gave a little bit now, a little bit later, a little bit later. But over the course of all the years, he tried to transmit Hakol, Bakol, Mikolko. He tried to tell over all of these Hanhoges and all of the Pesachim and the Style of Pesach and the Halach and the Agoda and the Jewish and the Nachshove and the Minhogim. Everything he tried to transmit. So in a certain sense, my feeling was that that's why there was such a unique bond between himself and all of his Talmidim. Because this really represented to us one of the Balei HaMasorah. This was the special, that's what Masorah is all about. The link of the one generation to the other. In a certain sense, the Rav felt how heavy this Masorah was that he was transmitting. And this, in a certain sense, humbled him very much. He never really had the perception to be. No one had the perception of himself, but he never had the perception of how much influence he had on other people and what position he played in the Jewish community. He never understood that if he had hundreds of people come all the time to the shiurim and so on, if he would have told people that they should be medaktik in a certain din, everyone would have been medaktik on it. Many of the dinim they told, somehow he never realized that. He never realized what position he played because he was like so busy carrying on this big masorah. He was so involved in transmitting this masorah that he never realized that. He never realized his position. And the Gemara in Bracha says, commenting on the Pasuk of Chumash, "V'hodaitam levanecha v'levnei vanecha yom she'amadta lifnei Hashem Elokecha b'chorei," we should teach the Torah to our children, we should transmit the Torah to our children in the same way that the Torah was given to us at Har Sinai. That just like at Har Sinai, the Torah was given the aim of the year of the rest of the Ziyah, the name of the trembling, v'yarhon v'yalu, v'yam demirachu, they were sittering, so too throughout all the generations, the Torah should be transmitted from one generation to the next with such an aim of year of rest of Ziyah. We used to sit the Rav Shir, we used to titter. I remember when I was a little boy, the Rav Shir, I used to have the distinct feeling as if the Malachim had come down from heaven on Tuesday and Wednesday morning to hear the Rav Shir in the classroom. We used to have Kriyat HaTorah Monday and Thursday. We used to have Kabbalah HaTorah from the Malachim. It was like the Torah Min HaShemayim was given again, Torah Misinah was given in the Shir. The Shir was so convincing. It was like Abchinach Shechina Medaberet Mitokran. It was so levitic, mamish like Berms Mechen Kinesinasa Messina. And we had the distinct feeling that this is mamish a man who's linking us up with the whole Masorah. He's transmitting to us the whole baggage, tremendous, tremendous baggage of the Masorah. Many of the things that he said, Bishas Maisa, we used to wonder, what kind of double Maisa is this? Is it really true? He told a story about Chaim, told another story. And it took us years later until we found a print that other people told over the same stories. He would say, Pshat, we would wonder. Just last week, in Shir, I was going to remark to this about Ein Odom Eis Matzmei Rosha. And I didn't understand for over 35 years what my Rebbe had said on the Sugya of Ein Odom Eis Matzmei Rosha. Until we learned it last week, I understood what was bothering him. I never understood what was thing he crutched. And there were so many things that the Rav said, and I just tuned off my hearing aid. I figured, what is he talking about? He's off the wall. What is he talking about? I stopped listening. I thought it was utterly wrong. And then years later, I saw this safe and that safe, and I couldn't understand what in the world are they talking about. And I felt so bad. If I would have paid attention, I would have understood it. The Rav said the same language, and the Shas Maaseh didn't know what he was talking about, so I didn't pay attention. And other Goyim said the same thing, and they don't explain what they mean. The Rav commented on different occasions of different Hespedim. He had Hespedim to many Goyim. He commented, he mentioned the Gemara in the end of Perek Avimisus in Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says when Rav Lezer was about to die and the Talmidim, the Talmidim came to visit him. So he said he learned so much from his Rabbein, but he barely learned Kikalev HaMalakik Minayam. And he tried to transmit, Rav Lezer Agoda tried to transmit so much to his Talmidim, but he didn't really succeed. He only was able to give them Mamish Kimikhol Bishroferes Ashmek Tabit, nothing. So the Rav commented on that Gemara, that the Gemara is describing the sort of the tragedy that's always involved in giving over a Masorah, that whenever he gives from one generation to the other, the Rebbe tries to give everything. Like the Gemara has and the end of Sochem commenting on the way the Tanaim were learning one from another, so the Gemara says, Yoisa Mimasha Ha'egel Rotzelina Katara Rotzelahonik. When the cow is full of milk, when the udders are full of milk, so the mother is paying, so the mother wants more to get rid of the milk, then the baby wants to drink the milk, to suck the milk. So the Gemara comments on Talmidei Chachamim who have a tremendous, tremendous baggage of a Masorah. They have a greater desire to transmit the Masorah than the Talmidim have a desire to learn the Masorah, to receive the Masorah. So the Rav commented that that's what Rav Lezer is commenting. He's not just saying on himself and his Talmidim. This is the way it always was in all the generations. That's what Masorah is always about. The one who has this tremendous Masorah has a responsibility and a great desire to transmit everything to the next generation. It's just impossible. It's not shy. And I remember on one occasion of a yahrzeit shiur, I think the Rav mentioned in the middle of the Chelek Agada, the Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara says that Rav passed away, and then the Talmidim had traveled to the Beis HaKvaros, and on the way back, they stopped off to eat sandwiches by a certain river, and then they washed until it's a daim, and then it's just a shayla when it came to benching, can they bench mezumen or not? In order to bench mezumen, it didn't require you have to have shloshe shaflu ka'achas. The Rav gave a shiur on benching mezumen, so at the end of, he always used to give on the yahrzeit, the night of the yahrzeit, he would give a shiur and halacha for 4 hours at least. In the earlier years, later years, he was already weak, he didn't give so long, but in the earlier years, he would give 4 hours, he would give 2 hours halacha and 2 hours agada. And then in the morning of the yahrzeit, he would give shiur all day long in Mishnayos. He used to, he would daven shachar, then he wouldn't eat, he would fast. The family tradition was that they never fasted, only on Yom Kippur. So the Chaim of Gezov, that everybody today is a Chaz Hashem Sakana. So the Rav said he doesn't follow the family tradition, he doesn't hold that he's a Chaz Hashem Sakana. He eats and he drinks and he's healthy and he feels that he's healthy enough to fast.